Hello, good evening, and welcome to Seascapes. On tonight's programme, cleaning beaches in County Mayo, and a new research vessel for the Marine Institute. The environmental programme Clean Coasts started in Wales in 1999. It's been operating in Ireland for more than 15 years now. Ottashka has been running beach cleanups as part of the programme all around the coast to great success. Joanna Nicholas joined volunteers on one beach cleanup in County Mayo.
Even in the last few minutes, I've already got two items of clothing, beer can, sweet papers, God knows what else. You know, if you look, you'll find it. Just after coming down from the car as far as here, about 10 steps.
That's Maria Staunton. And this is a beach cleanup at Old Head Beach in County Mayo.
What is that you're trying to pull up?
Piece of rope that's buried in the sand. And I was trying to extract it, but it's well stuck in, so couldn't get it out. We'd want a penknife or something with us for that job. That's fishing waste. That came from a boat. I'd say it washed in, or it could have been from the boating community here that might have had it for a mooring or something at some point.
Clean Coasts recently celebrated their annual Ocean Hero Awards, which gives recognition to groups and individuals for their outstanding work in caring for the coastline. Amongst them was this group from Lewisburg, County Mayo.
We're representing a group called Keep the Beaches Clean, which was set up by Louise Hastings. This year we haven't been able to have any organised outing. So every time I go for a walk with the dogs, I bring a bag and my picker. I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it. You know, I can pick up the cigarette boxes or the coffee cups. I just come back with a bag of litter and, you know, it builds up then. So I normally go to Carrimore Beach, which is the other side of Lewisburg. But I swim here every morning, and just as a kind of a thank you, I bend down and pick up whatever litter I see. I just feel, you know, if I was going into a pool, I'd be spending a fiver or something. Here, you're getting the fun for nothing. So just to give something back, I just make an effort to keep the place nice and clean. This is a litter picker. I actually ordered it online because I had ones that were no good, but this one is a decent one. It's lightweight. And it does the job it's supposed to do. It picks up the litter without you touching it. And in today's climate, it's very important not to be touching the litter, but that we get the litter picked at the same time. If you go online to 2 Minute Beach Clean, I think it's called, you can order a beach clean kit, which sends you gloves, bags, these high-vis tops that say Clean Coasts. And they're always a conversation starter. Well,
you have these on, the high-vis, people seem to take more notice of what you're doing.
And that's another Clean Coast volunteer, Vicky Gray, and this is her husband, Johnny.
For the summertime, it can be very busy here, especially last year, so we kind of stuck to our end of the beach, do you know, but, you know, can the council do more? Probably. You know, with one single bin here and one single bin over there.
In the summer. There's none at all in the winter. They don't service the bins down here in the winter.
Yeah, they take the bins away during the winter.
But they're very good. If you gather a bag or two or whatever of litter and you contact the local councilmen, they will come and pick it up. And they will thank you as well for your efforts, which it does help, you know, for you to keep doing it. But they're great if you just let them know there's a bag here to be collected and they'll pull in and gather it for you. And they're very amenable to taking it away and disposing of it properly. So I'm very thankful to them for that.
If another summer comes about that they want everyone to holiday at home, you know, what happens? Do we just keep going on at one single bin for anything from 500 to 1,000 people a day have to use? You know, it's overflowing by 10 a.m.
They
you
can't
know?
Be blamed to a point.
It doesn't offer you great incentive to actually do the right thing. The most prevalent thing that's on any of the beaches that we go to, it's just like green plastic nylon cord. It can be up from like anything from 1 inch to a couple of foot, or in a net style. But that is just destroying the coastline at the minute, I think.
And where did that come from?
It comes from fishing boats, I think. It's net waste.
Come down to the beach after a stormy day, the coastline is destroyed at it.
Yeah. Some beaches have more of the ocean waste coming in and landing there. Like if you go back to Runa or Imlach, you'll get, you know, washing up bottles that have Spanish writing on them and stuff. God knows where they have originated. the green string and net waste and stuff like that. Some of that is washed in from the ocean. But there's a lot of it up there around the car park and, you know, on the entry roads that is just pure carelessness. You know, cans, bottles, sweet wrappers, crisp packets, even items of clothing. You know.
My big one is people who bag their dog poo and then throw it on the beach. And
it'd be better off if you didn't bag it at all.
If you didn't bag it, like, dig a hole with your foot and, you know, get a bit of seaweed or something, put it in
the
hole.
It'll go at some stage.
Yeah, it'll go.
When you put it in a bag, it lasts forever.
Yeah.
And hang it on a tree, then, for people that live around here. It's just...
It's actually quite bad because my two now, when they come down, not so much Charlie because he's seven, but Mabel will see a bag and go for it. Dog poo in it, where people have just thrown it and...
Or on top of a rock or under a rock, because it'll genuinely still be there in 10 years' time unless someone else has to go and pick it up. Do you know, it's a simple little thing. It's your responsibility to pick up after your dog.
And it's amazing, if I walk from our end back here, I would think I have everything. And then when I turn around and go back, the amount of stuff you've missed, especially up in the rocks there, stuff hidden away. Find rolled up dirty nappies, and sometimes not even rolled up.
And this is a young volunteer, 7-year-old Charlie Gray.
My Friday at school, we go to the walk at a beach and we bring litter pickers, and sometimes we don't. But we always do litter picking, and if the tide is in, we go back to the school and read a book or watch a movie.
So your school is near the beach?
Yeah, very, very close.
And do you enjoy the litter picking?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Knowing that all the fish would be safe.
Now, because we're all confined to where we're living, there are more people using the beach. You can see how busy the beach is today. They're trying to discourage people from gathering in groups by closing off the car park and everything. But you'll still find people here using the facilities of the beach, and it would be nice to have a bin. So it's our responsibility to take home our own trash.
But yeah, it's I really enjoy it. And I'm very glad Louise organised this, because it definitely brought an awareness that wasn't there prior.
Louise Hastings is a student in Bulgaria. And from there, she coordinates the group that cleans up over a dozen beaches in her native Mayo. I spoke to her on Skype and she told me how the group started.
It was July 2018 and we had a heat wave. Myself, a mum and three dogs headed to the beach. There was so much rubbish that I didn't feel safe walking the dogs. Between broken glass bottles and just kind of said to mum, what are we going to do? And we were so disheartened that we just, you know, we said, we'll go home. We got in the car, took the dogs. We had nothing with us, no bags, no gloves. To be honest, I don't think I'd ever been aware of rubbish before. Do you know what I mean? Like, now I can't unsee it. If I go outside, I see everything. Prior to that, either I just wasn't exposed to it or I was oblivious. So we went home anyway, and I was in a bit of a huff about it all. And I thought, I'm going to put a post on Facebook and see if anyone will help me clean it up. So I put up the post just on my own personal Facebook page and had a number of responses. What time? I'll be there. I'll bring gloves. I'll bring bags. So we arranged for the following evening. I think we had more than 20 people turn up and collected over 25 bags of rubbish. Not including body boards, broken up pieces of barbecue, all sorts. So we had such a good turnout that night, and we kind of realized, okay, well, this is obviously an ongoing problem that we just weren't aware of, you know. So I set up the page and thought, see how it goes. It's no harm. It just took off like a rocket. Like, I, you know, it wasn't pre-planned. There was no idea there before. I had no clue what I was at. But people were just amazing. They were like, okay, we'll come and help. So it turned into a whole thing. Regular cleanups and a lot of volunteers. So there's about 1,700 people following the page. And during the peak of the summers, now prior to COVID, because obviously nothing has been how it would be, we could have had up to 80 volunteers on the beach a week. The big beach cleans bring out over 100 people for the main kind of events. But ongoing, probably over 100 people come in and go in, with maybe a strong 20 to 30 regulars that would be weekly. It's all been kind of going on from abroad. Whenever I'm home, we'll organise something on the beach, or the time prior to the last time I was home, we had an awareness course with Leave No Trace. So whenever I'm home, obviously I'll get personally involved on the beaches and that, but otherwise it's all run through the telephone. It all started that evening on a whim. Big shout out to Murchie from Somersop School. He was cleaning the beaches silently before we ever knew this was a problem. And just in general, everyone who walks along the road doing their 1 hour litter picks on all the other beaches. I suppose we have a number on Bertha. We have a number of people on Old Head as well at the moment. Silver Strand. Almost all of the beaches are served regularly. So the usual crew, they'll definitely know who they are. And obviously Clean Coasts, Leave No Trace, Mayo County Council, because without those three, we wouldn't have had the same level of support or help, because they sent us out a lot of equipment, bags, litter pickers, and they also sent visors for a lot of the kids in school for their beach cleanup. So thank you to them. And my mom, who I make do everything. They've all been fantastic.
Clean Coast now has 1,400 groups and an incredible 24,000 volunteers nationwide who clean up our beaches. You can visit their website at www.cleancoasts.org.
And thanks to Joanna McNicholas and the Beach Clean Group at the Old Head Beach in County Mayo. The Marine Institute is to call its newest research vessel the Tom Crean to honour the renowned Irish explorer. Kerryman Tom Crean undertook several adventures to the Antarctic at the beginning of the last century, and he was with both Scott and Shackleton on their ill-fated expeditions. Aidan Fitzgerald is the research vessel manager with the Marine Institute in Galway. He told me about their new ship.
Yeah, so the Tom Crean is a new 52.8-metre replacement for our older vessel, Celtic Voyager. It was designed by a Norwegian naval architecture firm, the same firm that designed the Celtic Explorer, actually. And it's currently being built in Astilleros Armán in Vigo in Galicia. So it's going to be a replacement for the Voyager. So it was designed to be ultra silent. So it's going to have a lot of different systems on board to keep it as silent as possible, which is a key thing, especially when you're doing acoustic research on fish stocks and other work like that. So it'll be able to take 26 people in total. That'll be 8 to 14 crew, depending on what we're doing, and up to 14 scientists. Be able to go to sea for up to 21 days at a time. And it's really designed to be a sort of more capable replacement for the Voyager, so it's got much more or less weather limitations than the Voyager. It can take more people, can carry heavier equipment, and has a lot more high-tech equipment on board.
It's about twice the size of the Voyager, and almost twice the size. What will it actually do?
So it will take up some of the duties of the Voyager. So we do a lot, we have a huge seabed mapping program, the largest civilian mapping program in the world, I believe, the Infomark. We will continue on that work. So at the moment, the Voyager, we're working our way down into the Celtic Sea. So as we go farther offshore, the weather conditions become a lot more difficult for the Voyager. You actually need a bigger vessel out there to be able to stay operational in the bigger seas. So we'll take over that work and move into deeper water. We do a lot of work as well on prawn stocks. So we do underwater TV surveys in the Irish Sea, in the Celtic Sea, and even out in the Porcupine Bank. And in some of those areas, particularly the Porcupine, the weather conditions, again, the Voyager is a very limited weather window. It can operate and get out there and work safely. And so this vessel will, it will just have much more capability to do that work, as well as it can also do some of the work that's currently been done on the Explorer, if necessary, such as herring surveys or mackerel egg surveys and work like that. But it will also be able to sort of offer a whole new level of capability to the academic marine science community, who can use it for ROV surveys or geological surveys, biological surveys and oceanographic surveys right out into the middle of the Atlantic. So it's really got the Voyager would have been a sort of almost a coastal vessel, whereas this vessel is a true, full offshore ocean-going vessel.
An ocean-going vessel. I've been on trawlers and you talked about mapping the seabed. You're able to tell people then afterwards what's actually on the bottom, whether it's rock, whether it's weed, that kind of thing, sand, mud.
Yeah. Yeah, so the primary bit of equipment we use is called a multi-beam echo sounder, which surveys a wide swath underneath the vessel, sort of in the Celtic Sea, typically about 400 metres wide. So you can tell the actual shape of the seabed, and then there's the reflection type and the backscatter from that sound source can tell you as well whether it's soft or hard. You obviously can pick up shipwrecks and things like that as well. And then we have other things like we run a thing called a sub-bottom profiler that actually just is a very another source that will go into the sediment and tell you whether it's, you know, whether there's rock farther down or whether there's rock on the surface, etc., and the depth of any sediment there. And then we follow that up then with grab samples or core samples. So you can get an actual sample and you can ground truth what you saw in your the data acquired using the remote systems. So then you get a really good picture of the seabed. And as well as that, then you can follow up with ROV or camera surveys. So you can actually see the biota that's on top of that different sediment type.
And when you, if a fisherman has all that information, it tells him what stock, what type of fish are likely to be on that surface on the bottom.
Yeah, it'll certainly help him because a lot of the stocks are very specific to certain types. So the prawns, for example, will enjoy a certain type of habitat or need a certain type of habitat. And yeah, certainly, the more information you have, the bigger help it is. Of course, a lot of the fishermen have some of this information already from their own equipment, you know, and from fishing the area as well. So there's a vast amount of knowledge as well within the fishing community, of course.
You're going to take delivery of this vessel next year?
Yeah, in the summer of 2022. It's so it's well advanced in terms of building the hull. The hull consists of 32 blocks, and they're working on 19 of those blocks at the moment, which is working their way up to the top of main deck level. They've laid the keel on the 4th of November with the first block that was settled down, and they're going to start assembling and joining blocks together now. So it's really flying along. The vessel, the aim is to launch it, a semi-constructed state, in September, and then finish the fit-out work afloat then. And obviously with all the systems and all the high-tech equipment that's on board, that takes quite a long time, and there's a lot of integration of different systems and testing and trialing. But we hope then to take delivery of it in the summer of 22 and get it operational then, when we've completed crew training and science trials and stuff like that, sometime in the summer of 22.
You bring scientists as well. What are they doing on your boats?
Well, so our marine crew will run the boat and deliver it to where it needs to be, and will handle any, you know, large equipment, be it trawls or grabs or any of that sort of stuff, deliver it to the seabed and back. But then the scientists take over there, you know, and they will process their samples. They also operate all the science equipment, so they acquire all the different types of data, be it oceanographic or data from the multibeam, and they also plan and drive the mission. So I suppose in some ways it's like that they're the customers, and the crew deliver, get the vessel to where they want it and make sure everything is operating. And we have technicians then as well on board who support them on the technical side. So it's a big team effort, to be honest with you. The scientists are the main people on board that can that actually collect the data and make use of it.
You're going to call it the Tom Crean?
We are indeed, yeah, yeah. Oh, he was amazing, yeah, absolutely. Stories about him and what he did, you know, was just absolutely amazing on his several expeditions that he was on. Yeah, so it's great to be able to honour him. We had a little boat called the Tom Crean on board, the Explorer, since the Explorer arrived. So this is great to be able to sort of, you know, have a full-on research vessel named after him.
What are you going to do with the Celtic Voyager?
Well, the Voyager has a pretty busy schedule ahead of it for the remainder of 21 and obviously for a good part of 2022. So then there'll be a transition between the two vessels at some stage. So it's actually, we have, the Institute has yet to decide the future of the Voyager at this point, but that'll happen later on in the year. But obviously our crews will be transferring over from the Voyager to the new vessel and getting their training and stuff like that. So there'll be a transition period, but we'll figure out what will happen closer to the end of this year.
Aidan Fitzgerald of the Marine Institute. Hearings have been ongoing in the Oireachtas Transport Committee about the reconstitution of the Marine Casualty Investigation Board. They are an important group and they investigate accidents at sea. The Transport Committee has been hearing from experts saying that the MCIB needs a complete overhaul and needs to get more powers. What's happening in the legislation is very complex, so I asked the Chairman of the Transport Committee, Kieran O'Donnell TD, to explain to me what was going on.
In respect of this particular legislation, the Merchant Shipping Investigation and Marine Casualties Amendment Bill, the Minister, Minister Ryan, wrote to the Business Committee, which is chaired by the Count Corla, asking there would be a waiver of pre-let scrutiny. And that's normally done on the basis that there's an urgency with the particular bill itself. We met as a committee, we deliberated on it, and we felt that it, our recommendation to the business committee was this particular Merchant Shipping Investigation and Marine Casualties Amendment Bill did warrant pre-legislative scrutiny by our committee.
The Marine Casualty Investigation Board, if there's an accident at sea, these are the people who look into this.
This specifically legislation arose because the European Court of Justice made a ruling in June of last year that the around the makeup in terms of the independence of the board. The board consists of five people. Two people were required to resign because based on the ruling of the European Court of Justice in terms of the question over independence, it was just a general principled ruling rather than specific. There is now three members on that board. However, the minister required to bring in line with what the European Court of Justice ruling, he required to bring in legislation to enable him to appoint two additional people. The quorum for the board is three. The board consists of five. However, there are only three on it at the moment, and he felt in terms of it being able to function, he required to have two additional people. He required legislation to bring that in. We held hearings on the pre-death scrutiny over a week ago, a public hearing, which involved the Minister for Transport, Eamon Ryan, and also Mr. Michael Kingston and Mr. Kieran McCarthy.
They're two lawyers who specialise in maritime law.
Area. So we are now, based on those hearings, we as a committee will now deliberate on what our report will be to Minister Eamon Ryan, the Transport Minister, and his department on this particular piece of legislation.
This Marine Casualty Investigation Board, they can sit at the moment because they do have three members, but
correct.
Should some of them be indisposed and there's an accident, they won't be able to sit to look at an accident.
The Minister is of the view that in terms of the being able to function on a practical level, that if all three members are not present, they can't function, and there are only currently three members of the board. To be able to increase that to five, he requires to bring legislation, and he obviously put it in terms of getting a waiver in terms of the urgency. We felt we needed to look at the whole issue around this legislation in the round in terms of how the particular the Marine Casualty Investigation Board itself in its overall function. And we held public hearings to that effect. And then we will be required under pre-legislative scrutiny to report to the Minister on our view on the legislation, and he then will proceed from there in the normal way through both houses of the Oireachtas.
Have you given yourself a deadline for this?
We'd hope that we'd have a meeting, private meeting this week ourselves to consider it, but certainly it's something that we are giving priority.
This, the Marine Casualty Investigation Board, it's a very important arm in the Department of Transport and in Marine.
Absolutely, and I think that it has a specific function. Mr. Kingston and Mr. McCarthy have specific views around the functioning of the board itself.
They believe it's fairly toothless. We've had them both on the programme before.
Minister has, apart from looking for the legislation to proceed, he has given a commitment that they will do an overall review of the Marine Casualty Investigation Board itself and its future and generally around its workings.
To give it more investigative power.
Everyone is in agreement, I think, in terms that the board needs to be able to properly function in terms of numerically. There are other issues overall in the effectiveness and the proper, investigative powers and the actual operation of the MCIB itself. And they are matters that we will be considering overall in terms of this specific legislation before us.
Those experts you've had before you, they want more power given to the MCIB. Do you think that's something that should be done?
It is something that has to be looked at. Transport Minister Eamon Ryan has committed to doing a review. We as a committee will be sitting down to consider all these issues, and we'll obviously be then issuing a report to the Minister. Key feature here is there has to be an element of urgency to ensure that changes take place.
Kieran O'Donnell, Chairman of the Oireachtas Transport Committee. Now, the transition of pieces of legislation through the Oireachtas isn't something we normally deal with in seascapes, but several listeners have been on to us about it, and they believe that this is a very important issue. We'll keep you posted. And a word now about the Afloat Annual Sailing Awards. They're taking place in a virtual event next Thursday, February the 11th. You can register to join and watch the proceedings on sailing.ie/awards. And we might speak to some of the winners next week. And that's it for Seascapes for this week. We're back at the same time next Friday. Everything on the programme is podcast and it's on our website, rte.ie/seascapes. If you want to contact me or the programme, the email is seascapes@rte.ie. If you're lucky enough to be anywhere on or near the water over the next week, stay safe.